Rashi, in the beginning of the Sedra, Vayero Elov Hashem Beilone Mamre. Why Beilone Mamre? Why, and why does the Torah tell us where God appeared to Avram? Who, Rashi says, Shenosen Lo Eitza Al Hamila. Mamre advised Avram Avinu concerning Brismila, and because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the schar that he appeared to him in his place. Elone Mamre. So what kind of Eitza did Avram Avinu need to ask from Mamre? So there's a Medrash. The Medrash says like this. When Avram Avinu got the mitzvah of Brismila, he went to his three friends, Onir, Eshkol, and Mamre, to ask their advice. He told Onir what God had commanded him, and Onir said, I think it's a bad idea, because you're probably going to die in the process. You're a 99-year-old man, you're probably going to die as the result of the operation. So that's what I think is going to happen. He left Onir, and he went to Eshkol. Eshkol said, look, even if you survive the operation, you just conquered four nations that want revenge on you. And they're just waiting for a time that you'll be incapacitated and they'll be able to come and take revenge. So even if you survive the operation, you're going to be putting yourself vulnerable to the revenge of these four nations that you conquered. He went to Mamre, and Mamre said, look, God has been very good to you. He saved you from the Kivshon Ha'esh. He helped you conquer four kings. So obviously, God is not going to let you die from this operation, nor let them take revenge. God does miracles for you. So that's what I think. A few questions. First of all, what kind of advice did Avraham Avinu need? And if he's asking advice already, there's two Rosh Hashivas, Shem and Aver. Go ask them. Not ask three Goyim, Onir, Eshkol, and Mamre. And thirdly, if you're already asking advice, why don't you follow it? Two of them told him not to do it. One of them told him, okay, so what did he do? Followed the one that he wanted to listen to. That's how we go for advice. We go and ask around until we hear somebody who says what we want to hear, and then we say, oh, I'm following advice. What was the whole idea here? Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch, when he created the world, asked advice from the angels, should he create man? Why did he do that? Because he wanted to teach us to ask advice even from a lower person. If God could ask advice from the angels, who are infinitely lower than him, then there's no one who can't ask advice from somebody lower than him. Now, on the surface, that doesn't make too much sense. Why in the world would you ask advice from somebody lower than you that knows less than you? If I don't know, what is he going to know? And if it's to make him feel good, you know, give him some covet, it's condescending. Right? Imagine, you know, I know a little bit about car motors. With the cars I have, you have to know something, otherwise you get stuck all the time. So my mother-in-law, Leah Shalom, knew nothing about it. I don't think she knew where the motor was. So imagine I hear a noise in the motor, and not sure if it's coming from carburetor, from the crankcase, or whatever, what exactly the problem is. My mother-in-law passes by, and I say, Ma, what do you think? It's absurd. What do you think? I know more than her about the car, and I don't know what it is. When the world is her opinion going to help? LMI, I want to give her the covet of asking. It's not covet. It's making her feel ridiculous. It's very condescending. So what's the purpose? The answer is, most advice is not for the sake of information. It's for a different reason. Person has an issue that they have to come to a decision what to do. Okay? An example, you want to decide which school to go to, which place to live, and you have certain options, and there are pros and cons of each one, and you have to make a decision, what is the best decision? Now, deep down, people are biased. And one of those options is the one you really want, even though it may not be the best one. So when you make the decision, what's normal is you see what you want to see. And therefore, you see all the positive things about the thing that you really want to be the option, and don't see too much negative about that, even though there are negatives, and you see all the negatives about the options that you don't want, and you don't see too many positives, even though there are plenty of positives, and then you think you made an objective decision, which is not really true, because you basically are seeing things the way you want to see them. You're very biased. Everybody's biased by what they want. Along those lines, it says that that same pasuk, Na'aseh Adam, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to write Na'aseh Adam, Moshe said, I can't write this. Mikana to no saying Pischon Pela Minim. You're giving a place for the Minim, the Apikursim, really refers to the early Christians, to say that there's more than one God. It says here, plural, Na'aseh, let us make man. So the Rabbanu Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, you write, V'harotze litos yite. Person who wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. Not my business. Wants to make a mistake, let him make a mistake. Now that doesn't sound like God. The Rebbeinu Shlom is not concerned about making people make mistakes. He's concerned that we shouldn't lift ne'iver, lo site michshol, don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind, don't help somebody do an aveira. And here the Rebbeinu Shlom is helping somebody by putting a stumbling block in front of them and writing something in the plural that sounds like there's more than one God. What they say is, no one ever became an apikoros because it says Na'aseh Adam. You look at the end of the pasuk; it says Vayas Elokim in the singular. So what's Na'aseh Adam? The Rabbam Shlom asks advice from the Malachim. No first grader ever became an apikoros. No seventh grader, the second time you learn Bereishis, became an apikoros. Nobody learning as an adult became an apikoros. Look at Rashi and you see what it is. But apikorsim bring a proof from here. That's what the Rabbam Shlom says. Harotz Elitos. Person who wants to make a mistake will distort anything to help make his mistake. It's not going to help. So therefore, I'd rather teach the lesson for the people who want to learn it, and the people who want to make a mistake are going to find anything to distort to support what they want to do. People see what they want to see, and they don't see what they don't want to see. I'll give you two examples, even though we don't really need any examples because it's very obvious. People can blind their eyes from seeing the truth. That's why a person who wants to do Averis is called a blind person. What's wrong with blind people? Right? Blind people are very nice people. Why would the Torah call a person who wants to do Averis blind? Says the Rambam, Shetaivas libo ma'avrin es eino miliros es oemes. Their desires blind their eyes from seeing the truth. They don't see it. The desire makes them see things in a distorted, corrupted way. Give me an example. I know somebody, very fine Ben Torah, who smokes. And I once said to him, how could you smoke? Don't you know that it's been proven that it's very dangerous to your health? So you know what he told me? In all seriousness, he said, I'm not afraid at all. All the research that's been done that's proven that smoking is dangerous to your health has been done on people who smoke 7 days a week. I only smoke 6 days a week. So therefore, it doesn't affect me. Does that make any sense to you? No. But it made sense to him. Why? Because he enjoyed smoking. And his taivas blinded his eyes from seeing the truth. You can corrupt anything. Anything. I once stayed by a rabbi in East Flatbush before I was married, on Sukkot. And he got a letter from a goy, and this goy thought that he was Mashiach. But the goy was Mashiach. It was before the internet, it was many years ago, and he wanted to convince the world that he was Mashiach. How did he get to the whole world? So he decided he's going to write letters to clergymen, priests, rabbis, ministers, prove to them he's Mashiach, and then say, once you're convinced that I'm Mashiach, tell your congregation. So with one letter he could get to hundreds of people. So this rabbi got one of these letters. So, dear Rabbi so-and-so, he got it from the Yellow Pages. I want to introduce myself. My name is so-and-so, and I am Mashiach. I'm the Messiah, and I've come, and I want to convince you that I am. And once you're convinced, can you please go and convince your congregation to accept me? What were the proofs? I don't remember. You have 10 proofs. They all were along the same line as the first one that I remember. First proof conclusively that he was Mashiach was the following. He said that it says in the Navi, I think in Yeshayahu, that one of the descriptions of Mashiach was he'll be lemala mimalachim. In English, that's translated, he'll be above kings. He said that for sure refers to me. Why? Because in the apartment underneath me, there are two dogs named King. And that puts me above kings. So, of course, the Navi was referring to me. Sounds crazy? Harotze li tosite. A person who wants to make a mistake can corrupt and distort anything. That's what he wants. He thought he's Mashiach. So anything you can do, as crazy as it sounds, you can bring as a proof. Now I'll tell you something more down to earth. As a rabbi in Miami, I had a Bala boss who, to put it mildly, was a little eccentric. And he often did things that were really wild. One day, he burst into my office and said, "Save my daughter's life." So I didn't know exactly what he was talking about, why he didn't go to the Red Cross or to Hatzalah or whatever. So I said, "Sit down, calm down, tell me what's the problem." He said, "My daughter has been offered a shidduch with a boy, and she's interested, and if she gets engaged to this guy, it's her, the end of her, the end of me, the end of the world." He went on to describe this guy as being a combination between Haman, Genghis Khan, and Hitler. "And if my daughter marries this guy, it's the end of everything." I said, "Look, I find it very difficult to believe that some yeshiva guy is as bad as you portray him. So I'll make you a deal." And I said, "I understand why your daughter doesn't want to listen to you, right? So let's make a deal. I'm going to bump into this guy by accident, okay, and strike up a conversation. If he's as bad as you say, I'm going to be lucky to get out of there with my life. And I will call your daughter in, and I will convince her to forget about this. But if I meet him, and I see he's not like you say, then you have to give me your word that you won't stand in her way, that if she wants to marry this guy, you'll let her." Shook hands, gave me his word. That few days later, I just happened to bump into this guy and eat lunch with him in a pizza shop. Total accident. And I had a nice 45-minute conversation with him. At the end of the conversation, I realized this guy is not normal. He wasn't as bad as the father-in-law, the father of the daughter said, but there was something very not normal about this guy. It was obvious. He was really crazy. So I called the girl in and I said, "Now it's going to be very easy, because this girl's a normal girl." And I told her, "You know, I bumped into this guy that I heard that you're going out with, and I really feel he's not for you. There's something seriously emotionally wrong with him." Now, I don't remember what the things were, but let me give you an absurd example. I said, "You know, I did some research on this guy, and I found out he's murdered 7 wives already." And she said to me, "I know, but he did it with such sensitivity." That's the kind of answers I got. I'm telling you, the guy is off the wall, what's it called, totally who knows what, and you're switching it around and telling me, "Yeah, that's a Mila." Why? Because Akop Shoim Techasa Ava. She was emotionally involved with this guy, and she couldn't see anything wrong. Everything she saw was filtered through her emotions. And the male, all she saw was good. We're all like that, right? Yeah. We can see it by somebody else. You can't see it by yourself. So we are very biased, and therefore asking advice is not so much to get information. It's to get an objective view of what the issue is that we have to decide. We usually have as much information as we need. It's not like the car motor. But we need to be able to see the whole picture, and you can't see that if you're biased and you're subjective. That's why when you go for advice, there's two ways that a person can give you advice. One way is they can say, "If I would have that issue, what would I do?" If they say that, they are not qualified to give you advice. It's worthless. Because first of all, they don't have the same circumstances as you, and they have their own bias. So what are you gaining? You're trading your bias for theirs. You know what they have to say? They have to be able to say, "If I was him, if I was her, with all her circumstances, but without her bias, what would I do? You have to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes. If you were them, what would you do? But if you were them, you wouldn't have their bias because you're not them. But if they were you, then you're just giving them, you're trading your bias for theirs. Your subjectivity for theirs. That's what Avraham Avinu said. I have this mitzvah. It's the first real mitzvah I have. I want to do it with the right intention. And therefore, I don't know what the right intention is because I'm biased. I have my desires, what I'd like the right intention to be. And intention makes a tremendous difference in how you do a mitzvah. An example. You have two people get up Shabbos morning and they say, going to shul, I want to be Yosei Kriyas HaTorah. Now the Baal Koreh, if he makes mistakes and I don't correct him, I'm not going to be Yotze. So the first one says, I hope the Baal Koreh doesn't make any mistakes. But if he does, I'm going to have to correct him, otherwise I'm not Yosei Kriyas HaTorah. Second one says, ooh, the Baal Koreh who's reading this week is my enemy. I can't stand that guy. I hope he makes a lot of mistakes so I can embarrass him publicly and correct him. They both go to shul. The Baal Koreh makes a mistake and they both pounce on him. The first one gets a mitzvah and the second one is an avera. The second one's using that mitzvah as a means to embarrass this Baal Koreh. That's his intention. So you can see, they're both doing the same thing. One's doing a mitzvah, one's doing an avera, because of their intention. So Avraham Avinu said, I want to go to people who can relate to a bris. Bris is a covenant. Who did he go to? Baalei bris Avraham. The people who have a connection to a bris. They could put themselves in my shoes. So he went to Onur and he asked him. Onur didn't give him bad advice. He didn't give him any advice. He said, well, if God gave me that mitzvah, what would I do? I think that he wants me to commit suicide. Because I truly died at 99 years old from the operation. So he left Onur. You didn't tell me what you think I should do. You told me what you would do in that situation. Same thing with Eshkol. Mamre said, look, if God gave me that mitzvah, I don't know if I can do it. But you, God saved you from the Kifshon HaEish. He saved you from you live a charmed life. You live a life of miracles. So for you, this is a perfect thing to do. God doesn't want you to die. He doesn't want you to sacrifice your life. He wants you to make a covenant with him because you are different than me. So he was able to put himself in Avram's shoes. And only somebody who can be objective can see God. Because emunah depends on being objective. Because if you're subjective, you don't want to believe in a God. You don't want anybody telling you what to do. You want to be hefker. Only somebody who's objective can look and see there's a God in the world. If not, then you blind your eyes from seeing that. You have all different excuses why you don't want to accept the fact that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam in the world. Emunah depends on objectivity. And therefore, the schar that Mamre got was a God appeared in his place. Who can see God? Somebody who doesn't only see himself. They say, what's the difference between a mirror and a window? Through a window, you see the whole world. And through a mirror, you just see yourself. You know what the difference is? A little silver, a little kesef. Kesef means money, but it also means kisufim, desire. When you have your desires, all you see is everything filtered through your desires, through yourself. All you see is yourself. When you take away that silver, take away those desires, then you can see the whole world. See the Ribbono Shel Olam too. So that is the idea of advice. Advice is mostly to get a objective view of the same things that you know, but see in a very distorted way because you see it through your subjectivity, through your bias, through what you would like to be. Because of that, only somebody who accepts that his moral system is based on Hashem, and therefore he's not the one to make the decisions what's right and what's wrong, can do what's right and what's wrong. But somebody who decides for himself what's moral, so you can distort anything. Sodom. There's a famous story in the Midrash, which is cute, but it comes to tell me a very profound lesson. The story goes like this. Eliezer once went to Sodom, and he was mugged, as they do to all guests that come there. They beat him up, left him bleeding in the street. But Eliezer was a gibor. So he got up and he chased his assailant and caught him. And he dragged him into court in front of a judge in Sodom. The judges in Sodom, their names were Sheker, Chazov, those were the names of the judges. So Eliezer is standing in front of the judge, and the judge says, what's the problem? He said, this man beat me up. I came to the city, and he mugged me. He said, okay, did he make you bleed? He said, yes. He said, fine, then pay him $50 for bloodletting. They used to have then, it was healthy to let blood. So he said, he did you a favor by letting you bleed. Give him $50. That was the judge's psak. Eliezer wasn't a fool. So Eliezer punched the judge in the mouth, made him bleed, and he said, look, whatever you owe me, pay him. Cute story. Cute story. What does it mean? What it means is the following. You would think that Sodom was a lawless place. It wasn't. They had laws. They had judges. But the laws were corrupt. The judges were corrupt. They made that which was lawless into law. They made right into wrong and wrong into right, and people have the ability to do that. That's the difference between if you accept a moral code from the Ribbono Shel Olam and it doesn't depend on your bias and your subjectivity, or you make up your own morals. And then you can create from light to darkness. I'll give you an example. In the 1960s, in the college campuses in America, they created a new morality. Okay? New morality was basically the old immorality, except it's not nice to say you're immoral, so they called it the new morality. But the new morality was, now you could be immoral. People have the ability to distort anything. And as long as you want it, you can somehow justify it. And somehow give it just another name, and everything is fine. And you create from the old immorality, the new morality, call it morality. Now it's okay. So that's why it says, Avraham Avinu told Avimelech, Rak ein yiras Hashem b'makom hazeh v'haraguni al dvar ishti. Avimelech said, why did you lie to us and tell me Sarah's your sister, right? When because of that I took her, we could have done a terrible aveira of adultery. Avram said, because I said that there's no Yiras Hashem here. You're very moral people. Avimelech was very moral people. You see from the psukim, he called his people together, Chas v'shalom, we could have done a terrible aveira. But their morality depended on their own understanding. And because of that, people can twist anything and decide to kill somebody and make it okay. The Nazis did that. The Nazis made a new philosophy, and in that philosophy, it's okay to kill Jews. It's okay to kill little babies. That's what happened in Mitzrayim. It says, "Vaytirena miyaldos esu elokim v'loasu kasher diber aleh melech Mitzrayim." Right, and they didn't kill little children. You have to have yiras Hashem not to kill little children. You have to be a mensch. You have to be moral. No, morality, if it's dependent on your understanding, will not stop you from killing little children. Because all you have to do is make up a new philosophy that says that little children of Jews are like cockroaches, it's okay to kill them. That's what the Nazis did. They created a warped philosophy, and that became their morality. Wasn't that they were immoral. Wasn't that they were just barbarians. They had a very, very refined and cultured people. They created a new morality. And according to that morality, it's okay to kill Jewish children. So the midwives could have killed little children if they didn't have Yiras Shamayim. Avimelech, with all his morality, but it's based on your understanding, tomorrow you can make it okay to kill somebody if you want to kill them. And you can justify it and make it moral. So that is the idea of why Avraham Avinu asked advice from three goyim, because he wanted to hear an objective view of somebody who could put himself in his shoes. The two of them couldn't, so they didn't give him advice. The third one could, and he heard from him how he looked at it without Avraham Avinu's bias. Okay. Any questions on that? Yeah.
Why did he even have to ask them? Hashem said do it?
No, it wasn't a question of doing it or not doing it. The question was, what should be my attitude? What does God want from me? Because to ask the Rabbanu Shalom, I don't know if a Navi, especially on the level of Avram, can just ask the Rabbanu Shalom to tell him answers what he wants. When the Rabbanu Shalom wants to be Menabi, he's Menabi him. Only Moshe Rabbeinu had that thing of Imdu Vesh Ma'o Ma'itzav Hashem. Other Nevi'im, if the Rabbanu Shalom wants to tell him, he tells him. If not, not. So he couldn't just ask to find out. So he had to find out. I want to know what my attitude should be towards this mitzvah. So I want to hear an unbiased, that doesn't mean that that's all he had. He had probably other things. But he wanted to at least hear one unbiased opinion of what he's going to do, not just what he thought he would like to do.
So why didn't he go to Yeshivas Shemini?
Because he needed somebody who could relate to a bris. And these were Bali bris Avram. Yeah.
So how could Melachim, like, they can't put themselves in Hashem's shoes. You said these people could give Avram advice.
No, they weren't Melachim.
No, I'm saying with creation, when Hashem asked. But like Melachim can't put themselves in Hashem's shoes.
So how could you learn from the Rabbanu Shalom asking from Melachim?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I got to think about it. It's a very good question. What's your name?
Rachel Tanner.
Very good question. I'm not going to... I have an answer I give you off the top of my head, but the question's too good to do that. I'll think about it. Remind me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, let's go to something else. Avraham Avinu, something completely different. Chesed. Okay, Avraham Avinu is the Baal Chesed. Chesed is giving and not taking, as the Michtav Melio says. People should be givers and not takers. And Avraham Avinu invites these guests to his house, and he keeps them under a tree outside. Now, if I invited people to my house, and I kept them outside under a tree and didn't bring them in, sit them in my living room, my dining room, or whatever, my wife would have my head. What kind of host is this? Keep them outside. And if you think Avram did something wrong, he was rewarded for it. We have the mitzvah of sukkah because of that. So why did Avram Avinu keep them outside? Second question. Chesed is the Michtam Elio. I'm sure you learned this Michtam Elio. Quintus a Chesed, right? Giving, be a giver, don't be a taker. But if everybody is givers, who's going to take? Who are they going to give to? So somebody has to take. There has to be one, you know, token person to take, otherwise people can't give. So it's absurd. How could everybody be givers if there's no takers? Third question. Avraham Avinu was a giver. He didn't take. Last week's Sedra, he didn't take from the king of Sodom. Right? I don't take even a shoelace. Gvalti. Except Avraham Avinu took from a lot of other people. He took from Paro in the beginning of last week's Sedra. Paro gave him all these presents or whatever, he took it. He took from Avimelech. Avimelech gave him Meiser, according to some opinions. He took that. And he took from Avimelech in this week's Sedra. Avimelech gave him presents or whatever, and he took it. So out of four times, Avraham didn't take once and took three times. What kind of take? What kind of giver is he? He's a taker, just as much as a giver, if not more. So where's this big chesed? The answer, I think, is that taking and giving is not determined by who is receiving and who's giving out. But you can be a giver by taking, and sometimes you can be a taker by giving. Let me explain. Let's start with the case of why he kept them under a tree. I'll give you an example first. You go to visit somebody in the hospital. You want to mekayem the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. You get to the hospital. You spent money, time. Okay, finally you get there, and the person's asleep. A chutzpah. I came to visit you, get my mitzvah, and you're asleep. What is what most people do? Either if they're very refined, they send in the nurse to see if they're really asleep, meaning wake them up. I'm here. If they're not so refined, they walk into the room, knock over a chair, person wakes up, they say, well, I didn't mean to wake you. But you did mean to wake them because you want them to know you're there, because you want to make your, you want to have your mitzvah, bikur cholim. In that situation, who appears to be the taker? The sick person. He's getting visited by somebody. Who's the giver? Me. I'm giving him a visit to a sick person. But what's really going on here? You, the sick person, are the giver. You're giving me the opportunity to do a mitzvah. You're manipulating me. The other guy's manipulating me to get his mitzvah. Because he's not doing what's good for me. He's doing what's good for him. I would rather sleep. Right? It's hard to, if your person's sick, he'd like to sleep. In the hospital, it's the hardest thing to get to sleep. My wife used to tell me, when she was there having our children, she said, well, they usually, if you finally get to sleep there, they wake you up to take sleeping pills. So it's the most impossible things to sleep in a hospital. This person's finally sleeping, they're sick. You wake them up. Why? Because I want my mitzvah. So you look like the giver, but you're really the taker. Same thing with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu said, these people were in a rush. And when you are in a rush, and somebody says, oh, could you stop in my house for a few minutes? Right away, you're nervous. You're not going to get where you have to get. You're going to be late. You can't just leave somebody's house. It's very intimidating. So Avraham Avinu said like this, look, I know you're in a rush. I want to do chesed for your sake, not for my sake. I don't want to be, so I can pat myself on the back and say I'm a great host. I want to do what's good for you. You're in a rush. I'm not going to make you come into my house. I'm going to let you eat under a tree. If you're really in a rush, we have milchiks right away. Milk, whatever, cheese, right away, no preparation, eat and run. If you're not in such a rush, you just said that to make me feel good, right, because you didn't want to bother me, I have a fleishik meal I'm preparing. You could wait around and it takes a little bit longer time to prepare fleishiks, and I'll give you a nice meal. Whatever's good for you. You want to eat and run? Eat and run. I'm not going to make you feel intimidated by bringing you in my house. You want to wait? I'll prepare you a meat meal if you want to wait. Whatever's good for you, that's what I want to do. That's chesed. Chesed isn't, you could, so it's possible for a person to appear to be giving, and really they're the taker. How's about the other way? How's it possible to take and really be a giver? One example, where you take in order to be able to give. When I was a youngster, the Satmar Rebbe, the old Satmar Rebbe, Reb Yoel, used to spend his winters in Miami. And I was curious. I never saw a Chassidish Rebbe in Miami. So I wanted to see what, you know, what a Chassidish Rebbe looks like. So I went and watched him. And he wore this gigantic robe with gigantic pockets, and they were overflowing with money, not dollar bills, $100 bills, stuffed in these pockets. People would come. They'd ask for a bracha, a kvittel, whatever, and they'd give him money, and he put it in these pockets of this robe. I remember thinking to myself, when I grow up, I'm going to be a Rebbe. This is a great parnasa. And then I saw some people came in with problems, poor people. I saw him put his hand in his pocket, take out a wad of bills, not even looking what they were, hand it to the person. That was it. Soon his pockets were empty. Then people came, he filled them up again. Could you say the Satmar Rebbe was a taker? No, he was a clearinghouse. He didn't have money of his own. So people came, wanted to give him money, he gave it, he took it in order to be able to give it to other people. That's a way that you can take in order to give. And that's what Avraham Avinu did with Paro. The Rabban Shem promised Avraham Avinu he'd make him a rich man. Paro did something that he deserved to have to give Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was in debt, says the Medrash says, that when he came to Mitzrayim, he had nothing. And he had to take on credit all the places that they stayed, all the hotels they stayed in, was on credit. He owed people money. He had people dependent on him for their support. And here, Paro does something that he is required to pay Avraham Avinu and to appease him. So Avraham Avinu said that this is the way the Rabban Shlom is giving me what to have, to pay my debts, to take care of the people I have to take care of. I'm taking in order to give. The heart is a symbol of chesed, because the heart gives out blood to the whole body. But if you ever learn biology, you know that the heart takes in blood from the whole body too. It takes in the blood, and then it sends it out. But the only reason the heart takes in the blood is not for itself. The blood supply of the heart is not what it takes in inside the heart. That's the external. Why does it take in blood? So it can send it to the lungs and oxygenate it, so it can send oxygenated blood to the rest of the body. So the heart takes in as much as it gives out, but the purpose of taking in is to be able to give out. That's chesed. That's one way. And that's why Avraham Avinu took from Paro. Second way. You want to take in order to honor the person who's giving you. When I first became a rabbi, I was young, and I decided I want to be a tzaddik. So I get a salary. It wasn't all that great, but it was enough to live on. And I'm not going to take any presents from people. Because Sonei Matanos Yichyeh, and people usually give their rabbis presents. They go to Eretz Yisrael, they bring like a present for the rabbi. Purim comes, they give the rabbi some money, Mechiras Chametz. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. For many reasons. But one is, I want to be a tzaddik. I'm not going to take presents from people. So, for the first 6 months I was a rabbi, anytime somebody wanted to give me a present or give me some money, I said, I'm sorry, my policy is I don't accept. And then one day, one of the older members of my kehila came to my office. He said, Rabbi, you'll excuse me, but I'm going to be very blunt with you. You think you're a big tzaddik because you don't take presents from people. You are insulting these people. They want to have the honor of having you take a present from them. And you are telling them, your presence means nothing to me, you're insulting these people. You don't want to use it, it's your business. But take it, at least give them the decency, the honor of taking the present they want to give. He didn't have to convince me, from then I take presents. But he was right. There's halacha in kiddushin. In order to make a kiddushin, a man has to give a woman something. If she gives him something, right, it's not a kiddushin. He has to give her. There is a case where a woman can give a man something and the kiddushin is good. How? A very important person, man, who doesn't take presents from people, and people vie to give them presents. The president is a king. And people want to say, I gave the king a present. So this woman, and you'd pay money for that. You'd pay somebody who's close to the king to convince him to take your present. He doesn't take presents from everybody. So this woman says, the woman gives the king a present, and he takes it, and he says, with the enjoyment you just got, that I took your present, Hariat Mekudeshesli. It's good Kedushin. Because his taking from her was really giving her honor, and giving her something that was worth money. Because she would have spent money to convince somebody, to convince him to take the present. So that's the second kind of thing. You take it to honor the other person. To give that person the honor that you accepted their present. They want to give you the present. So that was what happened with Avimelech in this week's Sedra. Avimelech was very embarrassed that he took Sarah. Very embarrassed. And he wanted a safe face. So he gave Sarah money and he gave Avraham money. And if they wouldn't have taken it, it would have said, well, we don't honor you. We're still upset. The fact that he took it let Avimelech save face. So he's giving Avimelech that covet of taking his present in order to let Avimelech save face. So that's a giver, even though he was the receiving end, but that was giving. The last case. In every relationship, people who need to take and people need to give, and many times a give and take relationship. But sometimes, especially between a husband and wife, where the wife is Jewish, Jewish women are known to be martyrs. Meaning, you know, you have three people at the table, husband and wife, and one little child. And they have enough food for an army. They serve the food, and the wife says, no, give it to my son. Give it to my daughter. Why don't you give it to your son or daughter? There's enough here for an army. You could eat too. You don't have to give it up for your children. No. Want to be a martyr. Just yesterday, I tell my wife all the time that she's a typical Jewish. She went to Kever Rachel yesterday, and she davened for her children, her grandchildren, for me. I said, did you daven for yourself? No, I was davening for herself. I said, why do you have to be a martyr, not daven for yourself? Right, Adarabba, the fact that your grandchildren and children and me will have a healthy, nice, what's it called, emotionally sound grandmother, mother, and husband is also, what's it called, also davening for them, right? So Jewish women are martyrs. Right? They love to be martyrs. But it's not a good thing. Because if you are always the giver in a relationship, that means that the other part of the relationship is always a taker, and that's very demeaning. Sometimes you have to be willing to take in order to let the other person be a giver. To give them the ability to give. That's also a chesed. It's a chesed to make somebody feel important that they also have to give. They're not always taking. They're not always the nebuch. They also can give. It's also not a covet. There it's to enable them to give. That's what Avram did to Malkitzedek. Malkitzedek needed to give Meister to a Kohen. There was only two Kohanim in the world, Malkitzedek and Avram. If Avram didn't take it, he wouldn't have enabled Malkitzedek to give. So he took in order to enable him to give. Those are the three cases where receiving something is really giving. And there are cases, like we said, where giving is really receiving. If your intention is to manipulate somebody else by giving them so you get your mitzvah, bikur cholim, or whatever else it may be. So those are the cases where Avraham Avinu took because those taking were giving. And Avraham Avinu tailor-made his chesed to the needs of the person, not to his needs. I want to be a good host. I want to be able to pat myself on the back and say, I really helped these people, or whatever. No, do what's good for them, even if you're not going to look so great, right? But do what's good for the people you're giving to. That's real giving. Otherwise, you're manipulating them and using them for your sake. That's called taking. Okay. One more thing, and then we'll stop. Since it's in this Sedra and last week's Sedra, this whole idea of Avraham Avinu saying that Sarah's sister came up with this great idea. Right. First he was afraid they're going to take you and kill me. So say you're my sister. Then they won't kill me, but they'll take you. So he solved half the problem for him, but he didn't solve it for his wife. So you know, Avram said, well, you can't sell everything. You know, we got to... Well, this is Avraham Avinu, and he says, give me presents. What did he think? This week's Sfedra was the same thing. So based on the Sfarno, the Ramban, a few other Mefarshim, and a little bit of spice from myself, what happens like this. Avraham Avinu knew that the people of the time in Mitzrayim kept seven mitzvahs of Noah. They didn't murder, they weren't immoral, as long as it didn't stop them from getting what they wanted. In other words, if they could do something in a permissible way, they do it permissible. But if they couldn't get what they wanted permissible, they would be over in Avera too. But they weren't people who just didn't care about it. They weren't barbarians. And therefore, he said like this. They're going to see you and they're going to want you. And if they can't do it in a permissible way, they're going to do it in an usher way. So if you're my wife, there's no way that they can take you and not either commit adultery, if they leave me alive, or murder, if they kill me and then they live with you, and then it's not adultery, but it's murder. Which one will they choose? They're not going to get you beheter. You're a married woman. So they'll choose to kill me and take you. Why? Because if they take you and don't kill me, every time they live with you is another Aveira. But if they kill me, it's a one-time Aveira. That's it. So they'll get over it. And then you're a widow. It's okay to live with you. So they're probably going to kill me and take you. I have a great idea, says Avraham. Let's say you're my sister. Then they can get you permissibly. They don't have to kill me and they don't have to take you. They can marry you. How are they going to marry you? They'll come to me and they'll say, you're the brother. Would you agree that your sister should go out with us? And I'll say, I don't know, what are you offering? And they'll start giving me presents to try to convince me to let you go out with them. And I'll say, well, I don't know if I like that present, or we'll stall. And after a while, the famine will be over and we'll go back, or we'll get out of here. One night, we'll just leave. So all this was a ploy to stall. They're not going to take you be'isser if they can get you beheter. And in order to get you beheter, they're going to have to offer me presents and try to convince me to let you go out with them because they think you're an unmarried sister. And I'm the brother. So I'm the one who they have to deal with, right? To see if I'll let you go out, just like you go with the father. There's no father over here. I'm the older brother. So that's what Avraham did to save both of them. That by the time they stalled, and it worked every single time, except for two times. And those are the two times the Torah speaks about. By Paro and Avimelech, because they were kings, and they didn't have to wait to ask Avraham. If she's an unmarried woman, we'll take her, like Achashverosh. So the two times it didn't work is the two times the Torah tells us about it. But every other time, Avram says, everywhere we went, we did this. And it worked every single time, except these two times that the Torah mentions. So you read in the Torah two times, you think it never worked. It worked every time, except those two times. And it was a great plan to save both of them. This way they don't have to kill him, and there's no purpose of taking her forcibly. All they have to do is vie for her hand. And by the time Avraham Avinu stalled them off and got presents or refused the presents or whatever, they were out of there, one night, they were able to escape. And it worked every single time.